Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the regular March 1st meeting of Morro Bay Planning Commission. Seems to be a lot of excitement about tonight's meeting. I've even heard people calling it Super Tuesday on the radio, so I don't know. But anyway, we will start the meeting as we usually do with a moment of silence. Okay, and if you will now rise and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum, that all members of the commission are present, and the meeting is called to order. Are there any announcements from the planning commissioners this evening?
I just want to give a shout out to all the people that are going to the bike park there and all the kids. Just a beautiful environment for our community. And if I had my rathers, we'd expand that thing as far as we could. You know?
It's probably already bigger than I can ride, but yeah. Any other announcements this evening? None? Okay. Then this is the time for a public comment. We'd welcome any input from any members of the public on items which are not on tonight's agenda. If you'd like to say your piece, come forward, and we'd love to hear from you. Okay, seeing none, we will bring it back to the commission and move on to the consent calendar. We only have one item on the consent calendar this evening, which is the current and advanced planning processing list. Are there any questions or comments on upcoming projects or projects in the pipeline? Okay, so seeing none, do we have a motion to approve the consent calendar?
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar A-1.
Second?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on the motion? If not, please, all those who approve, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion carry, nays? Motion carries 5-0. Okay. So we're whipping right along here and have arrived at public hearings. And we have one public hearing item on the agenda tonight, which is item number B1. And I will report that I have to recuse myself on this item due to proximity. And so at this point, I'm going to turn the meeting over to my co-chairman or vice chairman or assistant chairman, Jerry Luhr. Thank you.
Okay, seeing as I'm the B squad here, this is item number B1, number CPO-410 and UPO-369 at 289 Main Street. And do we have a staff report?
Yes, we do. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. This is 289 Main Street. It's a reconsideration of Coastal Development Permit CP-0410 and UP-0-369. On the screen there, you'll see a vicinity map of where this property is located. Zoning is R1 PD. It's in a planned development overlay. This is the property, this is the outlined in red is the property where it's located. And I'll give you a little bit of background on this project, because you may recall that the Planning Commission last saw this project on October 20th when it voted to deny the request for coastal development and conditional use permit applications. This is a vicinity map which also shows an aerial image of the proposed home in question. And just to, as I said, recap the background, Planning Commission previously reviewed this at public hearings twice before, on September 1st and October 2nd. The original Planning Commission hearing was continued with concerns expressed by the Planning Commission regarding bulk, size, and scale, and that the property was not compatible. And at the October 6th meeting, the applicant submitted revised plans to address those concerns by the Planning Commission. Ultimately, the project was denied due to bulk and scale, lack of visual compatibility, and then with specific discussion by the Planning Commission regarding the massing of the home as viewed from the Tidelands parking lot. After the October 20th meeting, the applicants appealed the project to the City Council, where on January 12th, the City Council did hear the appeal and reviewed revised plans that were submitted for council review after the Planning Commission's denial. As part of that, what the applicant did is they submitted revised plans in an attempt to address some of those Planning Commission concerns for the City Council to review that. The ultimate decision of the City Council was to grant the appeal, send it back to the Planning Commission so that the Planning Commission could have the authority to review those revised plans that the applicant did submit with direction. City Council gave direction to include additional visual renderings to assist in the evaluation of the home's bulk, size, and scale. And so before you tonight, you do see the revised plans that the applicant developed after the October 20th denial. The staff report outlines numerous areas where they've made changes. I have some slides that I'll go through some of these changes. And then also many of these slides are the slides that were shown at the City Council meeting, where you can see what the Planning Commission saw in October, how they revised it, and then the third thing is that the revised visual renderings to kind of better show the evaluation. And this slide here just basically briefly states what I've already said, is that after that October 20th meeting and in advance of the council appeal date, staffer did reach out to the applicant to try to clarify and provide better direction to the applicant on what the Planning Commission was hoping to see in terms of a project that met the city's guidelines on bulk, size, and scale. Excuse me, this is a summary of the proposed changes, and these are also in the staff report. So initially, the Planning Commission's direction, in summary, bulk, size, and scale, there were some other minor corrections that the Planning Commission directed the applicant to make, which was to more accurately calculate the lot coverage, correct the square footage, shorten the rear deck. Some of these corrections were made after the first meeting, and then on the right side of the screen, you'll see the applicant's response, where they did reduce their deck square footage. They changed some of the roof lines so that they now are perpendicular to the bay to open up some of the views from coming from Main Street, and then some numerous architectural treatments to reduce the massing of the home on that west side. And I'll walk through some of those here. So here's the proposed site plan, and just for clarity, I have outlined in green the property corners, and then in red you'll see the proposed site plan, and some of the massing that was previously discussed at previous meetings. I think in this red image here you can see how the home is very well articulated on the right, on the west side of the home. This is the Tidelands parking lot side, and then how it steps back along, going from north to south. The blue area on the screen shows the two decks. That was the subject of one of the first Planning Commission meetings. It was originally one larger deck that came out in this type of fashion here, and it now has been changed to two smaller decks. And so just going through some of these slides here just quickly to bring you back to refresh Planning Commission's memory on what they looked at the October meeting. So this is the revised floor plan that the Planning Commission last saw. And just for clarity, I've added here just to orientate yourself. Main Street is in this direction, and Tidelands parking lot is here. You see the deck is viewed on the south side. There were no changes proposed to the second floor. Actually, let's see. Hold on a second. Okay, no, there were changes. I misspoke. Okay, so this is what the Planning Commission saw, And then the council saw this. There was changes to the second floor. There is a reduction of 45 square feet. One of the bedrooms has been since converted into an office. And there are also some roofline changes, and I'll point those out when we get to the elevations and the simulations. It's the basement plan. There were no changes to the basement. There is an unconditioned square footage as part of the basement. Okay, so Planning Commission reviewed the east elevation, and then Council may reviewed a revised east elevation, and where you can see here the changes, I've outlined them in red, because I know that the slide is it's a little bit hard to see from this distance. So here you see on the, let's see, this is the east elevation. On the north end, they have changed the gable roofline to more of a shed-type roofline to open up the view corridor there. This red here, just for point of clarification, this is area that has gone away. This isn't new addition to the home. So originally it looked like this. And then now you can see that they have revised that, and you're opening up this area here, and then, oops, opening up that area there. Okay, so Planning Commission reviewed this west elevation. This is facing Tideland's parking lot. Council reviewed this, and then here you can see the changes. I've outlined them again in red, where they have changed the gable roof line over the covered porch to more of a flat roof, to reduce the appearance of massing there. This is the area over here where on the second floor there you see the reduction in square footage, and they've changed the roof line now. It's perpendicular to the bay versus parallel to the bay, which was a previous concern mentioned by the Planning Commission as far as these multiple ridge lines running parallel to the bay. And then the north elevation. I'm going to catch up here on my notes. I'm talking faster than I can turn the page here. Okay. So here, Planning Commission saw this. This is the north elevation and then the revised north elevation. So it also shows some of the treatment here that is different architecturally. And then Planning Commission, the south elevation, and then the council saw this, and this is in your revised plans that are included in your packet, which also points out some of the changes here, going from one large deck to two smaller decks. That's present here, and that's in this area right here. And then the covered porch roof changes there. So moving on to the simulations, so just start out with, this is the simulation that was shown at the September 1st Planning Commission hearing, and then at the October 6th hearing, really it's kind of hard to see the differences here, but you'll see that the biggest difference is the change in decks, going from one large deck to two small decks. And then so some of these changes that I just showed you in the elevation, you can see them here in the simulation where they changed the decks here. They're also proposing siding treatment along these lower elevations here, the reduction in square footage there, the change in ridge line, the gable roof going to a hip roof, and then also here the change in the covered deck. And then, so this is one of the first of many new simulations you'll see in your staff report, which is, as council directed, to submit some improved simulations. The applicant did provide these improved simulations. They're discussed in the staff report. They are much improved. They dramatically show the articulation. It's three-dimensional. The applicant is proposing to maintain the existing mature landscaping on the west side of the property that would assist in screening the home. This shows also some of these changed roof lines that I mentioned this before in the area of the second floor. You see here on the left the covered porch. The roof line now is different. And this is an image that's looking northeast. It's the original images were looking due east from Tideland's parking lot, looking straight on. The applicant chose this image and discussed this with staff prior to getting this ready for a Planning Commission hearing. It allowed them to better show the changes that they made in their attempt to reduce the bulk size and scale of the home. It helped them to show the different, you know, the stepping back, going from north to south, the articulation. Excuse me. And then there are some other simulations in the packet. So this shows a bird's eye view of the site plan looking northeast. You see this is the neighboring home to the north. And then an existing home here that's at the end of this common driveway. This shows it three-dimensionally there, but it's a bird's eye view. And then this is a bird's eye view looking southwest. And then here are some other vignettes that show the home. These aren't in context with the other surrounding homes, but you get an idea for the articulation of the home and how it's been revised since their original submittal. In these images, they're not showing the totality of all existing landscaping on the site because they wanted to point out the home, but they are showing all of the palm trees, some of the mature landscaping, obviously the very small, minimal landscaping. I mean, there's not grass here, or, I mean, you know, there is, but the point of the image is to show the home. This is a bird's eye vignette view looking northeast. And then this is also another one looking northeast. It's another rendering from that first visual sim where you can see the home in context with the mature landscaping that's there on site. And then it also is showing proposed landscaping there at the base. And the last image is a profile vignette view looking north. And so as revised, the home totals 2,837 square feet. That's conditioned space. The basement is unconditioned space, and so that's been separated out. That is the lower level, 503 square feet. The with a 520 square foot two-car garage, 356 square foot of decking, that's now as two separate decks, and then the 236 square foot of covered porch, which is adjacent to the kitchen. So in considering the council's direction, staff's review of the project is that what we have now is a much better project over the original submittal from September. The applicants have wholeheartedly sought to address the Planning Commission's concerns about bulk size and scales. Visual simulations are much improved that show that, and staff's recommendation is that after reviewing the revised plans and considering the City Council's direction, is that the Planning Commission reconsider and conditionally approve the Coastal Development Permit and Conditional Use Permit based on these revised plans dated December 14th, 2015, through adoption of Resolution 0716. And I will add that the applicant has brought the landscape architect, and so he is available tonight if there are specific landscaping-type questions, and then I believe their architect is present as well if there are architectural questions. And with that, that concludes my presentation.
Okay, thank you. Is there any ex parte communications that need to be disclosed?
I did meet with, I met with Mrs. Huff briefly when I went to observe the actual site.
Yeah. Okay.
I met with Laird, Mrs. Huff. Earlier today.
Okay. No, I have none. Are there any questions for staff?
No, Chair has. Cindy, do we actually have a revised west simulation?
Just those simulations that they showed to council, which I think I have that right here. This was the revised west simulation, and this is based off the December 14 2015 plans. But it was council that said, hey, we think you can do better on these and take this back to Planning Commission, but we want to see some improved visuals.
But we don't have anything from this view of the revised.
This is the revised. So, but what we have is, so they did, so they showed this. This was the revised. And then council said, hey, improve it. And this is the replacement image.
That's from the south, though.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We have an original west elevation. We have something that's closer up for the revised that isn't the same point of view. And then we have a so-called revision one that you showed, right? That just has the landscaping added. That's the three images that we have to judge the west elevation by.
Right. And this is reflective of the plans that you have.
Right. Okay, that's all.
Richard, any questions?
The enclosed porch, how big is it again?
I believe it's 236. I could scroll to that slide.
236, and then the garage 525, and the second story 503, right?
The basement's 503.
503 is basement.
Yeah, the second story is included in that 2837 number.
2837. Okay. Thank you.
Joe, any questions for staff?
Good. I only have one question for staff as far as which plans or which simulations were shown to the City Council.
This one was shown, and then I have the other. I have additional slides at the end that they saw. If you want me to,
If you could go through those quickly.
Sure.
It seemed like some were shown and some were were new plans. So
okay, let me make sure I don't miss any here. So. Okay, so Planning Commission saw this as the revised simulation from what Planning Commission last saw. So you have that. That's the primary west elevation. And then these are the new ones. And then so here, council revised simulation. This was the existing site conditions. This is just a little zoomed in. So this is what City Council saw. So they saw here's the existing lot. Here's the existing homes. The new home would be placed here by these palm trees. And then that was their proposed simulation. And then we did not get a revised east simulation that we presented to City Council because the emphasis was on that Tidelands parking lot view.
Okay. Any further questions for staff? Okay. At this point, we will open it up for public comment. And typically, we have the applicant speak first. So if you have anything to say.
Good evening, members of the commission and staff. I've spent enough time with you two. I think I can call you Cindy and Scott now. My name is John Huff. Myself and my wife, Alaire, who's in the second row there, are the owners of the property. And Gary Glandon is our landscape architect, and Tom Martin is our architect. I could go into a long and tedious discussion about how long we have spent with this whole project. But taking my wife's advice, because she's most often right, less is more, and that's what I'm going to try to do tonight. The site improvements were done some time ago, and they were done with the thought and the overview of the city to develop the entire project, not just one home. And we have stayed with this project through that time period, which is approaching 10 years now. We have always been invested in the whole project, not just one home. And we didn't do this in a vacuum. We thought carefully about what it was we were trying to achieve and the reasons we wanted it. And to that end, we have held on to the entire property at, with great difficulty now for a much longer time period than we thought we would have to. Our ultimate goal, of course, is to live in this final residence that we're building. It will accommodate us well, we believe. I think there was either in the October or the September meeting, which Kathy Novak presented for us, a misunderstanding about what we were trying to achieve with respect to a single level living space for us. We were never intending to build an ADA compliant home. That was not our approach to this from the beginning. We wanted for ourselves, in what we now refer to as our FRP, final resting place, a single level where we could come in from a garage. We could then have a master bedroom, a living room, a dining room, a kitchen, and an office. And we have achieved that, I think, through the modification that we've made consulting with staff. So we're very pleased about that. We hope you are pleased with this new approach. You will probably hear testimony tonight from people who oppose this project. I think they would oppose it on the basis of it doesn't conform to the neighborhood. Well, this is the third house we've built, and one that we bought that was originally on the property that we remodeled and built another garage and a studio on. While those that would say this project should not be approved would not like to include the existing houses that we have built. One is almost constructed, the other one we are living in. But we are the neighborhood. There's really nothing to the west of us except Tideland Park. You can see by the footprint of the aerial, the straight over aerial view, that the house next door to us, while it is single level and flat roofed, its footprint is almost, if not equal to the size of ours. I have to say that I want to thank Scott and Cindy for reaching out to us after the third meeting for this, two with you and now a third with you and then one with the City Council, to help us understand the nature of your reluctance to approve the project. I have to say that I believe, and I think it's well thought, that the ordinance as it stands is fairly vague, and it was difficult for us to wrap our mind around what exactly the Planning Commission was looking for. And that led to an extra meeting, maybe two extra meetings. But I think now with Scott and Cindy's help, we have finally achieved a product that takes into consideration your concerns, mitigates most, if not all, of those concerns, and we're looking forward to a successful conclusion to tonight's meeting. We don't believe that we could have gotten here at this point tonight with the revised plans and the significant changes we've made without the guidance of the staff and their communication to us of your desires as the Planning Commission. So I would like to thank you as members of the Planning Commission and certainly the staff for their hard work and long hours spent in trying to bring this project to a conclusion. I will do my best to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. We'll hear further public comment and may recall you. Do we have anybody else from the applicant side or... Just a second, Betty. Okay. Then, Betty, come on. Want to give the applicants a chance to finish their presentation?
Surely. Okay. My name is Betty Winholz, and I do live across the street from here. Acacia Dead Ends into Main, across the street from their property. So we feel we are neighbors to that piece of property. Just a couple of points. One, the house he mentioned to his north, that it's the same square footage, was actually built as a duplex. It was two families that went in together to build that. So his will be the largest house, over 3,000 square feet in our neighborhood. The second thing I want to comment on is, and I don't know if this came from staff or where, but it's interesting that the map that staff is using, or maybe that was provided, does not show the other houses on that property that are finished and built. This is the fourth house there, and there's still a smaller one below. And his comment was interesting about how they've hung on to the whole property and the whole thing. And for us, it feels like this whole property has been piecemealed because he didn't come forward with a plan for the whole area, but did them one by one. And so that's just neither here nor there, maybe. Personally, I feel like there's not a lot I can say because I think the council made their decision and you're kind of bound by what they've decided. I disagree with council that they've reduced the size and the bulk. They've articulated, but they haven't reduced it except by 45 square feet, which is nothing in, when you look at 3,000. And certainly from Tidelands, it looks like a three-story building, which it is. And so even though they're calling the lower level a basement, it's still a livable space. And so it looks like a three-story building. And so if one really wanted to address bulk, size, and scale, you would remove the top story, that bedroom that's now been turned into an office. But I don't think you have the privilege of doing that. So thank you for the work that you've done, and good night.
Thank you.
Well, I would like to just say for the record that this is an example of when you don't start right, you end up kind of in a mess. There was never a master plan, which there should have been, because this came under our subdivision code, and so then we would have, it would have been more compatible. But now this is an enormous house. It is three stories. But what I'd like to know is, every time they put a house in, they keep counting the road as part of the lot. Does this have a 6,000 square foot lot? With proper setbacks, without counting the road. So I hope you would answer that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll still have public comment open. Are there any questions for the applicant? Joe? Richard? Michael? I just have one question for the architect. Is there... What is the height differential for on the ridge of the top floor of your house? What's the differential between that and the height of the roof, top of the roof on the north house, the house to the north of it? Do you know?
Oh, no, I don't know what height that particular property is. It is one story.
So. Okay, could you please come to the microphone so the neighborhood can hear.
Yeah, we didn't do a survey on
that. Please state your name. I'm sorry.
Oh, Tom Martin. I'm the architect.
Okay, thank you.
We didn't do a survey on the adjacent property, so I have no idea how high that roof is.
Okay.
But it is one story, and with a small slope. And ours is two story at that point.
Okay. So. And then you also, there was the absolute square footage size reduction was 45 square feet in living area, and how much in deck space from the original floor plan?
Do you have the numbers on the original floor plan? I only have the proposed.
The deck went down by 60%, so from 822 square feet to 326 if we're combining the two smaller decks.
Right, okay. And was that original, was the deck to the north originally covered in the first proposal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, and it had a gable on it, which made it look even taller, so that's why we reduced the roof pitch to flat so that it would not be as imposing.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks for your presentation. Bring it back to for any further questions. I'll bring it back to the Planning Commission. Please, we're still open on public comments, so if you have something to say.
Yes, I wanted to speak to Ms. Cutter's comment about a subdivision. It was not a subdivision. It was never a subdivision. When we bought the property, and this is the history I didn't go into, although I could, I think, talk for 45 minutes on it, there were three lots existing there when we bought the property, a single home, a one-bedroom home on the middle lot. A map had been previously done and approved and recorded by the city of Morro Bay that landlocked all three parcels. So when we bought the property, we had three landlocked parcels. What we did is we lot split with a lot line adjustment the most easterly lot so that we could create an access through that lot to get to the middle and the westerly lot. So there was no subdivision. It was a simple lot split. And that's how we achieved four rather than the three that it was originally. So I hope that's clear.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Then a question for staff is that was brought up in public comment is, was the driveway included in the lot size?
It was, and I have a good slide that'll show that. I mean, a portion of the driveway, because we're looking at just this particular site, its address, this lot. It is about 11,000 square feet. So here is the edge of the property line in green. This line, I don't know if you can see it, this includes a portion of the driveway. So it meets all of the development standards. It's required to be 5 feet on the side. It is. It meets the required front setback. It meets the required, there's a 10-foot setback required when off the end of an access easement. And then, of course, it meets the rear and then the side, okay. Interior side.
Okay, thank you. So we'll close public comment on that, on this, and bring it back to the commission. Who wants to start for comments? Anybody? Michael, you're up.
Right. I know it's a long process, and I think from the south and from the east, it's improved. But in my opinion, it's a 4,000 square foot house. It's got a basement that's not conditioned, but it's habitable. It shows up like a story. The roof of it's changed, but that fact that the whole first floor is out of the ground, the horizontal band change from board and batten to board and batten, I think helps it. But fundamentally, the reason I asked about the west elevation is we never saw a revised west elevation because it hasn't significantly changed. And so from the Tidelands Park, it's still as massive as it was before, in my opinion, although I think the other sides are improved. I wish it looked like to the west what it looks like to the south, because there it really is articulated. This is really strung out. I think the landscape camouflages it to the benefit of the design, and I do think we've heard what city council thinks about it.
Richard?
I got a question for either one of you guys. The road that goes down there. I took a drive down to that road there. Now, I've seen it in other areas, okay, and one of them in particular that I have an issue with is on Quintana and Main. When I, back in 2006 or something, they were building all those homes there, and they started putting that road in, and it wasn't considered a road, it was considered a driveway, okay, and then they put a street light at the driveway. And what my question is when is a driveway become a road where it needs NPDS permits and a drainage issues, okay? This particular property, one of the things that I liked about this is I looked at the drainage plan and the drainage, the way it goes down, and the attention that the owner's taking with regards to using I'm not very good with plants and names and all that stuff. That's my wife's thing, you know. But using, like, proper vegetation for filtration, you know, and how that's being handled. So my thing was, I was taking a more look at the drainage issues. So I want to just maybe just be conscientious or careful when we start looking at it, like just looking at it like in a piecemeal, okay, looking at it how it integrates. So I'm not really asking maybe a question or anything, but I'm just kind of getting a, you know, just stating a concern. And then when I looked at the project, I'm kind of open to forming my opinion with regards to the input from a builder and an architect as well here, but that's and you of course, and those are the kind of things that I think that we should, you know, I appreciate that. For me, it was the drainage issues on how it's handled. I appreciate that.
Joe,
well, I have a collection of thoughts. First, I want to say that I think it's a really artful design of the house in terms of the detail and the variety of the facades. But it does have a very large scale, and it also appears somewhat massive, particularly because of that first-level foundation. And, you know, I'm new to the area, so I actually went back twice to look at it from the Tidelands area and took particular note of that little pocket park and the fact that this is a valuable view site. And so I was looking more closely, again, at this massing and the scale of it. To an untrained eye like mine, it does look like a three-story house, and it is a three-level house. And the landscaping area, the landscaping to break up some of that massing of the first floor, that carries with it its own criticism, and that we're attempting to break up something that we would probably otherwise not see, or rather prefer not to see. Those are really my thoughts.
Thank you. Cindy, got a couple questions on the landscaping, and is there a, I didn't see it in the conditions, but is there a condition on the landscape, the landscaping shall be maintained, and if somehow if the plants die, that they will be replaced with equal or greater size plants?
There isn't a condition in the resolution before you. That is something that Scott and I discussed when the staff report was being prepared, is how would that be enforced? Mm-hmm. It's for your discussion, but we did take out a condition that would have required them to maintain that landscaping.
Okay. And Scott, you had something to say?
We went back and forth on it a little bit. I think the concern was, by all accounts, the applicant has some interest in landscaping the site, and we weren't sure if we were, by framing the condition the way that we had it, sort of limiting them to what they could do there. I know there was interest in providing nice landscaping along the back, and they've, you know, even incorporated some of that into their renderings and whatnot, and so... we weren't sure where the Planning Commission was going to go with that, but we did have a condition in there, like Cindy said, and we did eventually at the last minute, sort of as we were finalizing the staff report, remove it. So it was on our mind as well. It was just once we started talking about it a little, we decided to remove it. So your thoughts are not far from ours.
Okay. Seems like we're using the vegetation to mitigate the scale. So it seems like an important condition to keep a minimal landscaping, at least to this, you know, my opinion. Also, as far as were any new palm trees and non-natives included in the landscape design, or were those all existing?
Yeah, they're all existing.
Okay, great. Okay. What does the commission think about a condition to require a minimal landscaping maintenance plan? Just a second.
Jim? Yeah, I think it would be essential. It would be essential.
Okay. Scott, do you have any wording on that?
We were just discussing that, so I was trying to remember exactly how the condition was worded. It had to deal with maintaining landscaping along that west elevation, similar to the, you know, the drawings and the plans that would be theoretically approved by the Planning Commission, were it to go that direction. Okay. So that was along the lines of what the condition, you know, said.
Okay. We'll open up public comment again for the applicant if they have a comment to this.
I'm Alaire Huff. Can you hear me? I'm one of the owners, and I'm terrified of public speaking, but I just feel like...
You're doing great.
I have to get
we
up.
We all are, too, so...
I'd just like to clarify just a couple of things. The house at 289, the proposed house, if you include the unconditioned basement, is 3,386 square feet. Adding to that a 520-square-foot garage gives a total square footage of 3,906 square feet on a 13,000 square foot lot. 281 Main Street, the house that we live in, is 2,829 square feet with a 700 square foot garage for a total square footage of 3,529 square feet. 279, which is under construction now, is 2,629 square feet with 605 feet and 3,234. So all of those houses, if you put the garage in, are above 3,000 square feet. That's one thing. The other thing about the landscaping, I love landscaping. I'm a native gardener. My point would be that we are at least as interested in screening the parking lot and the park for our privacy as you are so that they don't have to look at our house. I would just leave that with you. And thank you. I didn't do it right. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you did great. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll close public comment again. Okay, do we have a resolution, a resolution or a motion for this?
Just a little clarification. Your addition to the resolution was to have a maintenance plan. That's it?
Yes.
A maintenance and landscaping plan. So that's just to make, I mean, that's not really something we can enforce, right? We just, that's not really something we can enforce.
The condition is wrong with the land. So the idea being if there was some issue that arrived, you know, that came up later on or we got a complaint about it, the city would be able to look back, see the conditions of approval and enforce them. So they run with the project, the Huffs build the house, move someplace else, the condition remains.
Right.
And is enforceable.
Okay. Right. And that's my concern, you know. That not, we all wish that we all would live forever, but that doesn't happen. So, okay, any further comment or do we have a motion?
I have a comment.
Okay.
I don't know exactly if I'm going to be very articulate in expressing this. And this goes back to the dwelling on one level. I see in the design frequent use of stairs of one sort or another. But I understand that the intent of the design and anticipating perhaps sometime in the future a disability might arise and that the changes could be made then in one technology or another. So I wonder then, well, what is preventing the addition of one more stairway, which presumably would be from the garage to a main dwelling level on one level, which would allow the rather massive foundation to be lowered and probably ultimately resemble a two-story home. If I apologize if I'm not very clear in my question, but
no, I think I get your gist. But essentially, that would require us to deny the project and send it back for further revisions. And I think we either need to make a motion to approve the project or to deny it. And so does anybody have a motion either way?
I just wanted to comment Commissioner Ingraffia's point. That was the very point that was made at the first public hearing, which was rejected by the owner. And then it was rejected the next time by the owner. And the city councils looked at this concept and approved it. I'm reluctant to propose this being moved forward because I don't like it. But I don't think I'm going to vote against it because the council's already said in concept they didn't feel that was the issue. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be proposing.
Right. Okay, Richard?
Make a motion. Let's see here. Let me just get sorted here. Motion to approve resolution PC 0716 with the additional change of maintaining the landscaping.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Do we have a discussion? Joe?
I guess all I want to say is it's a really big house. And I think you've nipped at the edges, but you've got a really big house. And I hope you are able to pull it off as well as the drawings indicate. I know there's a lot of detail in it. I completely agree with Commissioner Ingraffia that at the tactical level, it's got a lot of wonderful things. And I do think from the south, it's especially attractive. And I think that street has a density that I think has a different kind of urban quality than we've seen around there. And I do think the roof changes make it better from the street. But I don't think from Tidelands, though. I don't know if anybody understands how big it's going to seem. It's going to be very large.
Mm-hmm. Richard?
Maybe it's big. But one of the things that I want to kind of look at, I always like to look at a little bigger picture here. And I think that we could glean a little bit of knowledge and a little bit of education with regards to how this whole area, these lots, are being, how the drainage plan is being handled. And I think that from that aspect, it's kind of a model that we should start doing. And we talked about this stormwater drainage, remember, with this sort of thing. To me, that's a big deal. That's a real big deal. And I just, that, when I look at it, everything together, I don't like everything, but that's why I'm looking for approval.
Joe, did you have anything else to say?
No.
Okay. My first concerns with this property were the mass and the scale from Tidelands Park. And I think I didn't have any problem with the design of the house. I think the house is designed really well. I just didn't, with the neighboring properties and the scale of the neighboring properties, I didn't think that it fit. And by reducing it down, stepping it back, dropping it into the hillside, I think we could have had a great project and would have been much more compatible with the neighborhood. But our elected officials have essentially said that this is, you know, that this is approvable, and so I won't vote no for it, no on it. But I think we could have got a, I think we could have just served the neighborhood a little bit better if we would have just been, you know, scaled the house down and articulate, you know, and just drop the height of the third floor a bit. But I'm not going to deny the project. So let's call the question. Roll call.
Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Sadowski?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
Aye.
Vice Chair Luer?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience. Okay. At this point, I will return the meeting to our illustrious leader.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate it. You definitely got the workload tonight. We have no new business or unfinished business on the agenda, so we'll move on to Planning Commissioner comments, future agenda items, random thoughts.
I have a comment on a presentation that was given at Colessa's bookstore recently by, and you know, I forgot her name, but I remembered the book she wrote, and it's called Think South. And I would highly recommend anybody that cares about the planet, take a look at that book at Colessa's bookstore and actually look into what is happening in Antarctica. And this has to do with a story of there was a crossing of on dog sleds across the long way around Antarctica, and it'll never be able to be repeated politically. It was done at a time right before the Soviet Union fell. So, but I think that, you know, climate change, sea level rise are for a coastal community should be are paramount, and we should be concerned there. It's happening right in our neighborhood. It's not something that's being talked about in Paris. And I think that it'll be a good read. Thanks.
Thank you. Sounds like it. Other comments? Planning Director comments. Scott?
I do have something for you. I'm going to pass it out, and maybe we can take a minute or two so you can read it, and then we can have a little bit of a discussion on it. It is a existing policy for cargo containers in the city.
Okay, We're just going to take a minute to look this over.
Thank you. All right.
let me know when we're ready to move on. We're good? Okay.
So, found this and was made aware of it because we had some, we were kind of going out and looking and trying to get some of the cargo containers in town cleaned up. Some that had been sitting out there on some commercial properties and persisting over time, and so the code enforcement officer has been working on this. This issue came up and kind of looked through the policy memo, and it doesn't say much other than, you know, if you're going to have them, we'd prefer that you have them screened. That's good because it's a lot better than not being screened. I was a little concerned that it was a fairly short-sighted policy memo and didn't address a number of things that you can come up and come into contact with when you're looking to place cargo containers, and really should we be looking to place them? It's probably another question in commercial zones and that type of thing within view of the public. Maybe they're appropriate in you know, some of the manufacturing areas, some, maybe not all of them. I was just, when I saw this, I was like, this is interesting, but I don't know that it really tells the whole story, and is this something worth maybe a larger discussion, something to be agendized or not? And so I thought I'd at least show it to you so you could read through it. My understanding is this probably comes from like 2007, 2008-ish. Don't have a whole lot more information of it than that, from it than that.
Seems like I'm going to have to develop container consciousness before I form any opinions on it. I'll start looking around and try not to be quite as oblivious as
we've been sort of getting some of them moved out, but we still have some that are around town that have been there for a while. And maybe not the most attractive thing to have on commercial pieces of property, and that are out front, you know, that aren't maybe in the back behind it or something like that.
So just from reading this over, and correct me if I'm mistaken, Scott, that these would not be allowed, cargo containers would not be allowed, period, in residential zones or in retail commercial or in visitor-serving commercial, only in manufacturing and what is C2?
It's general commercial. It's a little more intense commercial. C2 is most of Quintana, actually. You know, you think, okay, oh, that might be the manufacturing area. It's not. Most of it's C2. So it's Quintana is that area. We have a couple of, M1 and M2 uses in town. The property next to the bike park is an M1. There's another piece, I think, that's just north of that on North Main that kind of is tucked back in one of the neighborhoods back there. Small piece of property is M1.
So are the
M2, I think, is the power plant.
Are the issues you've been running into in those areas, or are they with cargo containers in other areas?
Well, it is in some of those areas, yes. It's in some of the inquiries we've had about placing these. Some of the properties where they can go are actually fairly prominent. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of a concern about that. I mean, you can just think the property next to the bike park, that's a fairly prominent location right there. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the more prominent pieces of property in town.
Now, as I think about it, there are probably some containers down by the fishing dock at the...
We have a few down there, some small ones. There may be one or two larger ones.
Well, the reason I mention is that I never found it objectionable. It was like it added an element of authenticity, you know, and made it less of a designed tourist attraction.
I mean, I had less of an issue with it in areas like manufacturing zones and things, because you expect to see things like that come and go. Or on construction sites for the storage of materials on a temporary basis. I mean, that's normal stuff. I mean, to have a secure place for folks to store when projects are under construction, to store their materials and tools and stuff is not uncommon. I don't think from a temporary standpoint it's really the issue. It's just some of the ones we've had around town that are maybe not so screened and fairly visible in areas, but it doesn't seem like maybe you've even really noticed them, so maybe it's less of an issue. I mean, we get complaints about them all the time. I was just curious as to what you thought about the policy and whether there was anything else you wanted to talk about it with it or not, or would you just use it? I mean,
how do you distinguish a cargo container which is being used for storage from... I mean, they're cargo containers, right? The idea is that they get filled up with stuff and then somebody comes and picks them up and takes them somewhere, right?
Usually they're used on a more permanent basis to move materials in and out and things like that. A lot of the ones we have in town are used that way. We do have them in association with construction jobs sometimes when you have larger ones. We have the use of them, you know, a lot of them in a lot of larger commercial projects when I worked in Pismo Beach. We don't have the number of sort of large developments going on in Morro Bay right now. Most of them are one-off single-family homes, that type of thing. So you don't need that type of storage on site. In fact, it would give them away in most instances. So.
You know, it's interesting. I know there are these trucking companies where people are actually moving, and they will plant either a cargo container or the trailer of a truck for, I think, 3 days. And then the owner has those 3 days to load it, and then they cart it away.
In the city hall parking lot, we were redoing the conference room, and we put a pod and had them drop it off so we could throw all the stuff in the conference room, from the conference room into the pod to store it while we were doing the renovation. Again, that's a fairly normal thing, not something we're really interested in regulating or really careful. That's temporary. It goes away.
But it takes place in a residential area.
Yeah, those are temporary again too. Not so concerned about have it here, like the pod example. You go and you're moving and you're going to load those things, stack it full, and then at some point in a few days, a truck comes over, picks up the pod, takes it off. That's fine. If it was stored in the front, you know, in the front, maybe in the driveway or something, in front of a garage for, you know, months on end, then maybe you might have more of an issue with it. But
hey, Scott, let me ask you something. You mentioned where the bike park is, and then you mentioned that. What's the zoning there that would allow for kind of?
It's M1, so it would allow for the storage. I mean, it has to be behind a fence, so you'd have something on it. So.
Yeah, you know, what I would like to see is, like, you know, when you have a view shed, you know, like you're down Highway 1 or, you know, in your bike park or your main street, you know, we have to be sensitive to the view, you know, just having the storage of a bunch of, you know, like, looks like, you know, Port L.A., you know, Long Beach or something, you know, you've got to be sensitive that way. But in general, I think it's... I don't really see a whole bunch of them, but okay. If it starts being in your face, yeah, you know. So I would say just, it would be a very sensitive to, like, view sheds, you know. Okay. Like, we don't, as you, like, if you're a tourist, right? You know, you come cruising to, you want to be assaulted with
okay.
that kind of stuff.
I just brought it forward to see if, you know, what you thought, because we've gotten several complaints about them recently and, well, within the last 6 months. And I was kind of wondering, I saw this policy and was sort of wondering, I didn't know about it, I didn't know we had it until I was searching around, and somebody was like, oh, we have a policy on that, and I was like, oh, I got to go find it, and so dug it out and found it. Didn't have a whole lot more information on it than this, don't know how it was adopted or used or where this came from, there's no resolution associated with it, there's nothing else, and so I thought before we, you know, started saying, yeah, this is the thing and passing this out to people, I might, you know, at least stop by the Planning Commission and say, hey, you know, what do you know, if anything, about this, and what do you think, if anything, or think it sounds good, and that's what we should be doing, that's fine. I just, a little leery about using things that look like policy and that we were doing this, and I wasn't aware of it, and was only someone else being vaguely aware that it existed because they'd ran across it somewhere, you know, at the bottom of a drawer or something.
I just got one thing. Sure. Operationally, like, you working, you can make do with this or not?
It's good. In the areas where you can have them, they're supposed to be screened from view, at least by a 6-foot fence. I mean, that's perfect. You want screening, you know, for these, as opposed to having them sitting in your parking lot or whatever, you know, next to your business or what have you, as a permanent sort of storage option, which is the way they're used in some instances around town. They've been converted to other uses in some of the other areas, you know, around town too, where they're not screened, and so we've been giving options to folks similar to this, but, you know, they're being oftentimes used on a permanent basis. So.
There's, at one point, I think there was a city... It wasn't even I don't think it was a code or a zoning, or it was basically a city standard that if you did more than $5,000 worth of work on your commercial property, that you would then have to do all improvements for curb, gutter, and sidewalk, basically all the utilities that would be required in a full development.
Wow.
And that's part of the problem. I think that's why a lot of these cargo containers have been dropped in those areas, because you couldn't come in for a small storage shed without having to do all curb gutter and sidewalk and street, you know, sewer and utility upgrades to your property. So there was, you know, that was the standard operating procedure around here for decades.
It's so swung back and forth over time. You can drive down through neighborhoods and see where developments triggered curb gutter and sidewalk, and then right next door, you know, came along a little later and I didn't have to do it. And then further down the street, you know, you see another time in place where the city required it. It's mostly because the city's policies and ordinances aren't super specific, yeah, or really well, you know, geared on the on that thing. So it's kind of been an, oh, I interpreted it to mean this or to do this. And
yeah, and so I've got to say, I've got a couple containers on my property, my commercial property, and so this does impact me personally. And you know, there are, I mean, it's tough enough to do business in this day and age, and so any other requirements or any other conditions and, you know, financial constraints just make it tougher and tougher to have a business and support other people. So that's my concern, you know.
I guess the time thing makes a huge difference to me. Something that's temporary, you can put up with a lot of anxiety. I don't like the idea that they're ever in a parking space unless it's for a very short-term use, because that's, you know, it could be impeding, you know, rescue, you know, et cetera. When it comes to the, these things range in size and scale quite a bit. And, you know, some of these ones that, you know, they're the equivalent of a semi-trailer in length. And that's pretty big. And I would think, though, as long as we're not violating the setbacks and things, that's not necessarily objectionable to me. The quality of the container is huge. These things deteriorate over time because they're steel. When they're in good shape, I don't think they look bad at all. I think I prefer them to most of the buildings I see in some of our commercial areas. Actually, we've got a pretty low threshold for talking about containers, considering what we have in town here in some of the places. But specifically as storage, because it's very common now. You know, when I had a chance to be in London last summer, and there were at least three places we went that are pop-up container retail places, and they're fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen
and
a few of those.
It's small incubator kind of thing.
Yeah.
So my concern basically is more about what's the nature of the way they're dispersed, the quality of them, and things like that. It wouldn't necessarily bother me to see some down by the bike park if they're painted and things like that. Mm-hmm. If they're sitting there rusted, scattered, you know, a lot of times they just roll them off the truck and they're flat, boom, there they are. So it's not like you have a precise survey of where to drop that thing. But I think in general, I don't have as much of a problem maybe as it just depends on the context. I would hate to see them close next to a residential district. I think that's a concern. And I can't tell in my mind, I'm having trouble remembering what the smallest one you can get is. Because I actually may prefer the smallest one to what I see as some of the storage things on residential property, which to me are some of the worst. As soon as somebody builds a house they've spent a fortune on, they drop some storage building on the site that's just ghastly, and that concerns me. So I'm even in a residential neighborhood, if for something smaller. But what's our threshold for a permit in a residential neighborhood? It's not that big. It's 80 square feet?
Yeah, when you get above that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anything's that small. I don't think the smaller pods are there. But I see them all around for construction. They're actually pretty tidy for that.
I think they work well for that use. I mean,
yeah.
And they're fairly, I mean, you can secure them pretty well, you know, and so that makes sense when you see them used in that capacity.
So I guess I'd say setbacks, temporary, no parking spaces, make sure they're, there should be some threshold for accepting them in terms of kind of cleanliness and tidiness.
Maybe bike ramps on each side of them if you put them in the bike park there.
But, I mean, I think this is probably a reasonable, I mean, short of, given the length of time that we've had to deliberate on this, I think this is not unreasonable, not an unreasonable tool to deal with complaints and to deal with the situations that are obviously inappropriate or poorly maintained or whatever. But I think in a larger context, I think Michael was referencing this, that what we're really kind of talking about here is the general topic of accessory buildings and what the standard should be for accessory buildings, because some storage sheds are tremendously ugly, you know, and you know, would upset me as much as a cargo container, if you know, or whatever. So it seems to me that the whole topic of accessory buildings, storage buildings, et cetera, maybe needs to be dealt with more comprehensively. And in some areas where view shed is important, where the aesthetics of the environment are part of that particular district, there need to be different regulations than in some of these commercial districts. And maybe also the issue is not whether or not you can put a storage container on it, but whether those particular pieces of property that are quite visible really ought to have that zoning designation or not. You know, that's as...
Believe me, that's a question that I was asking myself about it when I started looking at the map.
Yeah.
And thinking about what those properties looked like, I was kind of like, interesting choice for making... You know, yeah. A really prominently, you know, visible piece of property. So
I mean, I think that whole issue needs to be added to the long and growing list of concerns as we go through the general plan and local coastal plan.
Yeah. Well, this is good. I appreciate the input. I just, when you find stuff and you don't know where it came from, you know, I just kind of liked it. I thought, well. I found it today, so that's why I brought it forward. I was like, we're going to the Planning Commission anyway. I could at least show it to them. And
there was no date on this.
No, there's no date. And that's why I said it seems to be the 2007-2008. We had this is kind of what our, you know, the letterhead looked like, and it had that on the bottom of it with all the addresses for the different, you know, departments and things. And so that's kind of the time frame when we used it. So I was doing a little guesstimating there. So I was just figured if we were going to maybe point to it and have and use it in some instances that as options, or you know, when the code enforcement officers are talking to folks about, you know, what they can do, you know, I thought screening's good. I mean, that's a good start. But then I was, you know, because I didn't really know where this came from and don't have any history on it other than some folks knew we had it. So I thought I'd just bring it forward for a short discussion to see what you thought about it and kind of leave it at that. I wasn't really planning on doing a whole lot more than that unless you guys had issues, at which point we could agendize it for discussion further.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the whole question of whether or not the container is visible is an important one. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you've got a retail building that fronts, say, on Quintana, and what's behind you is no development, you know, and you put a container behind your business, who knows? You know, I mean, I think it's the presentation to the public that's the concern.
Yeah, and that's the issue we have with the, you know, with the complaints. Usually they're related to ones that have been, you know, at one time were used for, you know, temporary storage purposes, which have now become permanent, and then they're on properties and areas that are pretty visible. And because of where we're located, next to the ocean, some of these don't tend to look as nice as they could. Commissioner Lucas was correct. I mean, that's kind of the thing. And they start getting pretty rusty and maybe not looking so great. And, you know, and then that's why we got the complaint. You know, had they maybe been maintained, maybe that wouldn't have drawn the attention of some folks. I don't know. So. All right. Anyway, that's it. Looking for some input and to hear what you guys thought about it. Thank you.
Anything else?
I don't have anything else.
Okay. Well, we have come to the end of our agenda this evening, and therefore we will adjourn to our next regularly scheduled meeting, which will be here on March 15th. Thank you.
Scott, I'm going to give you half.